This episode is brought to you by Ground News. Authoritarianism, the practice of eating only people who have published books. Wait, that's not right. Ah, authoritarianism, truly one of the words of all time. A decadent 7 syllables long and wonderfully vague. If you've ever had a conversation about politics, and if you're watching this channel, I'm sure you have, you've likely heard someone use the term, or maybe you've even used it yourself. It's popular in pretty much every corner of the mainstream political spectrum. Liberals, conservatives, the dreaded centrists, and even some lefty groups like anarchists and libertarian socialists. But what does it mean? And what gives it so much weight in the political discourse? Well, that's what this video is about. We've got a pretty poor understanding of what authority is here in the West, but I bet we can fix that. Let's start with a generally accepted definition. Authoritarianism, favoring or enforcing strict obedience to authority, especially that of the government, at the expense of personal freedom. Okay, this is a pretty bad definition if we're being honest. It mentions the government in there, but doesn't really commit to being political, just kinda, when you want people to follow the rules. That's not super helpful when we're trying to nail down a heavily used term, and one that deals with some serious topics. Okay, so what if we expand it to include how people generally use the term? Generally speaking, when someone uses the word authoritarian, they are often, but not always, using it as a term to demonize a system that is different from their own, regardless of the facts. They're using it as a synonym for totalitarian, a word you don't really hear much anymore. It's sort of fallen by the wayside in favor of authoritarian, kind of like using the word commie as a slur has been superseded by tanky in the last few years. Same idea, different era. Both of these words, authoritarian and totalitarian, have been leveled at fascism and communism, often in a direct attempt to conflate the two. This is largely due to the US's extreme anti-communism post-World War II, to the point that they'd lump in their former friends, the people without whom the Allies could not have won the war, with what most people believe to be the greatest evil in history. Yeah, that's all well and good. People use a political term vaguely to demonize their opponents. Big surprise. But we still need some specifics. What exactly makes a state authoritarian? Well, if you have a scroll through the comments of just about any political video that talks about socialism, you'll find people ready with their pre-written list of objections, usually bundled under the prime objection, that's authoritarian. Things on that list include the existence of large prisons or labor camps, a covert police force, state media, a strongman leader, censorship, that sort of thing. And to be fair, all those things do sound scary, and none of them are ideal. I think we can all agree that we'd love to live in a society where prisons didn't need to exist. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Before we go any further, I want to emphasize that I'm not trying to attack anyone here. The objection to authoritarianism is present in a lot of different camps. People may define it a little differently. For example, a libertarian might call seatbelt laws authoritarian, while a liberal might consider the influence of the church on the government authoritarian. Meanwhile, my anarchist friends are yelling from the back of the room that the very existence of a state is authoritarian and we need to abolish bedtime. Again, teasing, no offense intended. Okay, we all on the same page? Authoritarianism is a red flag for a lot of people, and there are some specific objections we can consider. So, let's consider them. Here's what we're going to do for the rest of the video. First, we'll look at the list of objections as understood by liberals. And I mean that in the broadest sense, liberals as in subjects of liberal states, not in the conservative versus liberal sense. Then we'll look at those same objections as understood by the left, again, pretty broadly speaking, basically everyone from social democrats and beyond. Then finally, we'll consider a better way to understand authority and authoritarianism. Sound good? Alright, liberal friends, I've got a pretty good idea of the kinds of places you feel are authoritarian. Top of the list, Soviet Union, the big one. Perhaps the target of the most intense smear campaign in history. Then we've got Cuba, China, North Korea, and likely a handful of other projects. But I think it's safe to say that these are the big ones. When you look at any of these projects, it's not difficult to see the one thing they all have in common. They're all socialist. And when you see this, it's not entirely unreasonable to come to the conclusion that authoritarianism is a core feature of socialism. We'll address this a bit more thoroughly in a few minutes, but suffice it to say that in the West, we may have a slightly biased opinion on the matter, through no fault of our own, We've just been subjected to nearly 100 years of Red Scare propaganda at this point. Everything we're taught growing up in the Imperial Corps, especially in the US, points us towards the conclusion that communism is evil and capitalism is righteous. But here's the part where I'm going to have to ask you to be willing to consider some unpleasant truths. And I don't say these things to engage in whataboutism or because I'm anti-American or something. Quite the contrary. I believe that in order for any country to live up to the standards it sets for others, it needs to soberly reflect on the facts. And the facts indicate that everything we're taught about these awful authoritarian socialist countries, we are also guilty of, and often to a far greater degree. Let me elaborate. One thing that rarely gets the attention it deserves is how we talk about authoritarianism. And I mean that literally, like the very words we use. Take the DPRK. We never hear about the government of North Korea. We hear about the Kim regime. This is common when Westerners talk about non-capitalist governments, or even capitalist ones that aren't vassal states of the US. They have a regime, we and our allies have a government. The way we talk about different systems goes a long way towards coloring our perception of them. People criticize labor camps, or secret police, or any number of other scary authoritarian words. But here's the thing, we have those too. And if you look at the data, often to a far greater extent than any socialist project in history. We just don't call them by those names. We don't have secret police, we have plainclothes officers, or the intelligence community. We don't have gulags, we have detention centers. Which, by the way, house far more inmates than the Soviet Union ever did. And of course, we don't have slave labor, we have penal labor. We put inmates to work manufacturing hand sanitizer during a pandemic or fighting fires because enshrined in the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, slavery is illegal except as punishment for a crime. And a lot of the time, that crime is just being poor. A parking ticket you couldn't pay. Getting caught with the same drug a rich person uses, but you don't have the money to buy yourself out of trouble. We don't have a Ministry of War, we have a Department of Defense, despite never once fighting a defensive war. Every military action taken by the United States, from bombing hospitals to drone striking foreign citizens, is given the cover of defense. We don't have state media or propaganda, we just have news. Those news outlets are, of course, all owned by the same corporate interests who funnel millions of dollars a year into government pockets to make sure their profits are secure, and their anchors dutifully repeat the ruling class's ideological positions.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Their guys are dictators, ours are presidents. Their state has a regime, ours has a government. We are free and happy, they're oppressed and miserable. Our nuclear arsenal is for deterrence, theirs is a threat to global peace, despite the US being the only country on Earth to have ever used nuclear weapons. And we did it twice, on civilians, on purpose. We have a democracy, they have a dictatorship. Despite, by all accounts, places like Cuba and China having far more representation and opportunity for democratic involvement than places like the US. So the way we talk about government structures, characteristics, and actions matters. Without even knowing it, we can end up falling prey to some very subtle, very sophisticated propaganda that primes us to hate people we've never met, whose economic and government structures we know nothing about, and with whom we share far more in common than we do with our own leaders. Okay, fine, but those are just words. Who cares what we call our stuff? All right, let's talk specifics. In a striking 2012 article by Adam Gopnik called The Caging of America, the author notes that, quote, "Overall, there are now more people under correctional supervision in America, more than 6 million, than were in the gulag under Stalin at its height." And this is coming from an American writer with a thoroughly liberal worldview. It's a poignant comparison because, as we all know, Stalin, gulags, and the Soviet Union are the trifecta of what the average person sees as authoritarianism. The fact that we're doing worse than that, even if you buy the inflated numbers of widely debunked books like the Black Book of Communism, should tell you something. And fun fact, the CIA wrote a report in the 50s that the whole Stalin strongman thing was largely a myth. It was just a very useful myth to the capitalist powers, so why not perpetuate it? But I know what you're thinking. Everybody knows the US has a thing for prisons. That's like one thing we could ease back on a little bit. That doesn't make the country authoritarian. Let's continue then. How about surveillance? It's pretty widely believed that citizens of socialist states are the subject of extreme surveillance. But what if I told you that none of them hold a candle to the US? Don't believe me? Take a look at Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Thanks to this piece of legislation, every single person in the United States is the subject of incredibly intense scrutiny. We have a mass surveillance program that allows for the collection of phone conversations, text messages, emails, web searches, and social media messages. Everything you do is being monitored. But wait, it's called the Foreign Surveillance Act, so why are we in the crosshairs? Well, it started out as a way to keep tabs on communications between US citizens and foreign nationals deemed a threat of some kind. But over the last decade or so, the scope of the project has expanded dramatically. What was once strictly a counterterrorism tool, which is already incredibly vague and dangerous, has now morphed into a domestic surveillance apparatus where the NSA provides this data to the CIA and the FBI, which they can use to open investigations into any person in the country without a warrant. But what if we want to give US intelligence agencies the benefit of the doubt? They're just doing their job, right? If you're not a criminal, you have nothing to hide. According to a 2022 report, the FBI and CIA conduct millions of these backdoor searches for no legitimate reason. They've pulled data on family members, journalists, political commentators, even government officials. For what reason? Who knows? They want dirt on a politician they don't like, so they read their Twitter DMs. They saw you in a coffee shop and thought you were cute and asked the barista for your name. That's all they need. Some random intelligence creep can plug in your name, phone number, or email address and have access to years of your personal communications, web activity, address, personal details, all of it. No authoritarian regime in history has ever wielded that kind of surveillance power. Okay, dystopian prison population, largest surveillance apparatus in history, that all sounds pretty bad. But at least we have the freedom to criticize the government, right? The secret police aren't going to come drag us away. Well, I've got some bad news for you there, too. US police are the most vicious and unaccountable in the world by far. There are plenty of videos online of police arresting journalists, brutalizing peaceful protesters, even laughing about killing innocent people. I have a whole video on the subject, actually. But here's the gist of it. According to ongoing reporting, US police kill over 1,000 American citizens per year. 1,000 people. And I can hear the objection already. Yeah, well, some of those people were probably criminals. Police are not meant to be judge, jury, and executioner. They're meant to arrest people if they have to, and then hand them over to the judge, jury, and we really should talk about the executioner part. Open social media on any day of the week, and you'll see a story of an officer-involved shooting, where the media tries really hard to twist the reporting to make the cop sound less like a murderer. With body cameras often required these days, it's getting harder for them to hide their crimes, though they still try. Anyway, the bottom line is this. If we look at any other country on Earth, let's say China, the hot-button supposed authoritarian hellhole of the day, and we compare police violence stats, the US is far worse. In the US, in 2022, police killed 1,201 people. In China, that number is zero. Oh, wait, nope, I read that wrong. Zero people killed by police since 2019, a year when two people were killed. Two people in 5 years, in a country with a population four times greater than the United States. Since 2019, US police have killed nearly 5,000 American citizens. So, we have a more dystopian prison situation, we're the most spied on people on Earth, and our police murder three people on average every single day. If that's not authoritarian, I don't know what is. And this isn't to run defense for the excesses of past and present socialist projects. In fact, socialists are among the loudest and most well-read critics of these experiments. The Deprogram guys and I have a podcast episode specifically dedicated to the topic, and we plan to do more in the future. The point of all this is that if we're going to rightly level criticism at some states, we need to make sure to apply that standard universally. And that means starting at home rather than simply passing judgment on countries halfway around the world or that have long since passed. Okay, that's the liberal part taken care of. Now it's time to have a little chat with my friends on the Western left. The right does a very good job at presenting a unified front. The capitalist class and the forces of reaction are incredibly powerful in the imperial core. The left is already on the back foot, and we have been for many, many years. This is why it's frankly absurd how much infighting goes on among the left. Social Democrats sniping at tankies for being authoritarian doesn't do the movement any good. Funnily enough, the label authoritarian is only ever applied to successful socialist projects. The ones that failed were somehow more pure. But the moment a new system takes steps to ensure the security of their people and their new project, they're labeled authoritarian. I think part of this is that there's a lack of understanding among Western self-professed leftists regarding what it actually takes to change the status quo across an entire country. Every revolution, including bourgeois revolutions like the American one, are authoritarian by default. Those in power will never give up their power without a struggle. They're not going to let you vote out the very system that benefits them. To understand the nature of revolution a little better, let's go back to the man himself. No, the other one. His sugar daddy. There we go. Friedrich Engels. This large beard wrote a brilliant little piece called On Authority. It's like a page long. None of you have any excuse not to read it. It's linked below. But here's the part that I think is most applicable to this video. Have these gentlemen ever seen a revolution? A revolution is certainly the most authoritarian thing there is. It is the act whereby one part of the population imposes its will upon the other part by means of rifles, bayonets, and cannon. Authoritarian means, if such there be at all. And if the victorious party does not want to have fought in vain, it must maintain this rule by means of the terror which its arms inspire in the reactionists. Would the Paris Commune have lasted a single day if it had not made use of this authority of the armed people against the bourgeois? Should we not, on the contrary, reproach it for not having used it freely enough? Therefore, either one of two things. Either the anti-authoritarians don't know what they're talking about, in which case they are creating nothing but confusion, or they do know, and in that case they are betraying the movement of the proletariat. In either case, they serve the reaction. While it might not feel good to be called out from beyond the grave, it's so important that we understand what Engels was talking about here. Because it's still true today. If a mass of people decide they're done with the current oppressive system, rise up, build something new, and then fail to protect the gains they've made, their project will be destroyed. We've seen it many times throughout history. The reactionary elements in society won't go away. And people with wealth and power before the revolution will still have that wealth. And will have likely fled somewhere like the US where they can agitate for military or CIA intervention. This was the case in Chile in 1973, when the democratically elected socialist president Salvador Allende failed to take preventative measures to ensure the vicious reactionary class and their US-based co-conspirators couldn't undermine them. Long story short, the Chilean right wing launched a US-backed and US-funded coup to overthrow the government, eliminate Allende, and install a fascist military dictatorship that plunged the country into recession and suffering for decades. In order to avoid this happening, a budding socialist project, or heck, any project, requires police, it requires the shutting down of reactionary outlets, the banning of certain kinds of speech. There's a reason Germany banned everything related to the Nazis, for example. It's because they wanted to keep that sentiment from spreading as much as possible. It requires an intelligence apparatus to listen for terrorist plots, which were all too common post-revolution. In East Germany, the reactionaries would routinely attempt to blow up civilian train lines. It requires prisons to keep these people off the streets. And historically speaking, the socialists have been much better at using prisons for rehabilitation rather than just packing human beings away to rot like we do in the US. These things may not be morally correct, but like it or not, they are necessary. And that's something that every system has agreed on. I would love nothing more than to see an alternative work, but it never has. Maybe one day I'll be proven wrong. That would be amazing. But to the people who believe it is possible, you need to ask yourself how it's going to happen. We've seen what the people in Tsarist Russia had to do. We've seen what the Cubans had to do. We've seen what the Vietnamese had to do. What the Chinese had to do. What the Americans had to do to separate from the British. Your anti-authoritarianism, while I genuinely believe it comes from a good place, is handing an easy victory to the capitalist regime. They want you to play by their rules. It's their game. You play by their rules, you lose. End of story. One final thing that's important to note is that this anti-authoritarian stance is very much a Western thing. And I think the reason for that is that we here in the Imperial Corps are in a very privileged position. We can hold these naive beliefs because we don't have any skin in the game. We're not the ones under the boot. We're not the ones whose resources are being extracted, or whose homes are being bombed, or whose cities are being occupied by armed invaders in the name of freedom and democracy. We have the luxury of condemning others because we've never been on the receiving end. Think for just a moment what it would be like if your neighborhood was occupied by a foreign military force, doing unspeakable things to your friends and loved ones, taking your belongings, burning homes, torturing people in the name of national security. What means would you resort to in that situation? I can't answer that for you, but it's something to think about. I know this has been kind of a heavy video, and for a lot of you, I'm sure this is the first time you've been asked to look at your home country more critically. If you're interested in learning more about any of the stuff we've talked about, there are links in the description. We all have a responsibility to choose our words carefully, apply labels correctly, and hold our own nations to the same standard we expect others to meet. Maybe it's time we retire the word authoritarian and try to engage with the facts more precisely, more honestly, and in good faith. This is a really interesting topic when you dig into it, and as you might expect, vaguely using words like authoritarian isn't just a problem in one corner of the political arena. So I just wanted to take a second to show you how prevalent that vague language is even among mainstream news outlets, with today's sponsor, Ground News. Here we have three examples of news coverage of China, the US's current favorite boogeyman. We've got one source from the right, one from the corporate center, and one from what most Americans would consider the left. Notice how each article uses our conveniently vague word to make the reader feel a certain way. For the right, China is authoritarian because it's not conforming to the American conception of unfettered free markets. For the center, Latin American countries are authoritarian for choosing to trade with China rather than Taiwan, which would benefit US corporations. And for the so-called left, if you open the article, China is guilty of digital authoritarianism for pushing back on false narratives produced by Western antagonists. As we've seen throughout the video, this behavior is par for the course, even among professional news outlets. As with anything, the key here is to remember who benefits from this kind of slander, and Ground News goes a long way towards helping the reader understand what interests are funding each of these outlets. This is something I get asked about a lot. How do I help parents or friends break out of their little propaganda bubble? It's great to analyze rhetoric like this, examining wording to look for bias and determining who's behind each outlet, but it's a lot of work, and none of us have time for that. That's why I always recommend people check out Ground News, because it has a ton of really useful tools to make building media literacy skills a lot easier. Ground News is a web and mobile app that aggregates over 50,000 news sources and offers intuitive, easy-to-understand comparison tools so you can do things like what we did here. See how vague language is being used to serve particular interests. You can also see the political leaning, factuality rating, and ownership of every single news source. For example, reporting on this story about war with China and Russia is fairly evenly distributed, with 35% right bias, 35% center, and 29% left out of 21 total sources. We can also see who owns the outlets. On this story, it's mostly governments and media conglomerates, with 25% each. There's also a new comparison tool that points out the differences between left, right, and center-leaning sources. Ground News is the perfect first baby step towards media literacy, and signing up helps support what we're doing here at Second Thought. If you're looking for a way to give your friends and family a great set of tools to understand media bias, who it serves, and how to spot it, I highly recommend you check out Ground News at the link below. And if you really like it, they're currently offering a 30% discount for their Vantage subscription to all Second Thought viewers. You can only redeem the discount at ground.news/secondthought, so be sure to click the link below. If you enjoyed this episode, consider dropping a like. If you hated it, a thumbs down. You can check out our previous content by clicking the links on your screen. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.